okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return. I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Mel Weber. SP Futures down 2. No, wait a minute. Dow Futures down 2. SP Futures down 2.25. NASDAQ Futures down 625. So a little bit of a give back on yesterday's huge rally and the on the back of Tuesday afternoon's huge sell-off on the close. So we came, got that back and more yesterday. There's just money continuing to pour into a few stocks. Apple was up like 15 or something. Tesla. The idea of an auto company going up that much is just startling to me, but it's everybody's favorite. Lou, how are you, bud?
I'm very good. How are you this morning?
We're doing good, but we still can't use the expressway to get downtown. We're going to keep the bridges open and downtown inaccessible for all the workers. Then we'll let those up, and the first time the looters want to come down here, we'll just, you know, let them come right down again.
You know, I read that story. I've read those stories about what was going on there. I'm astounded that, first of all, the mayor allows or doesn't adequately staff the cops to deal with, you know, an attack on literally on Chicago's gem, and to allow that to go forward, you know, the second night in a row is insanity. Coupled with apparently, I just saw a story that the state's attorney for Chicago, Kim Fox, the Jesse Smollett benefactor, is charging virtually nobody in these arrests, which is further insanity. And I don't understand how the moneyed interests in Chicago, along with the working class voters, but the moneyed interests are allowing this to happen. You know, what happened to the collusion that you and I used to talk about between the businesses and the political structure, this political establishment? Is that just gone now?
They don't have the group that is currently in, the Tony Preckwinkle, Kim Fox, Lori Lightfoot, are totally immune to that. They got their own agenda. And nobody knows what it is. They don't pay attention to anybody, Lou. So, I mean, she's more worried about a bunch of guys around Montrose Beach without masks than she is about the looting.
And I can't believe that. And I can't believe that the people that are donating to her campaign, and I know who's donating to Kim Fox. That was a Soros. She was a George Soros pick, but I don't understand Lightfoot's, the support for Lightfoot has to be just falling apart, much like what's happening in New York City.
That's the part that I have trouble even explaining. There is no support for Lightfoot. There's none. She ran for, she's black and she's gay. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. She's black and she's gay. She got 90,000 votes in the primary. Nobody got any votes. There was no support there. She probably got 90,000 votes out of Boys Town, for God's sake. I mean, I don't know where they came from, but I mean, it's not like she had a run. And once she got in, she's running against Tony Preckwinkle. And nobody likes Tony Preckwinkle because of the soda tax and everything else. Because all she does is say, she says something and she goes, turns back on it. Plus she's got this abrasive personality. So she ends up, you know, beating her in the runoff. But there was never any support of any kind that you would expect.
I mean, what you guys are seeing is what they saw in New York and Seattle and a number of other places, where the ideologues in power are just following their ideological precepts rather than, you know, the reality that's actually occurring in front of their eyes and that the rest of the city's population has to deal with. We have a similar problem here in Denver, and it's, although not nearly as bad as it is in Chicago, but again, this crazy, it manifests itself in a variety of ways. Here it seems to be it manifested itself in terms of the response to the rioting, and I'm not going to call them protesters anymore. I'm going to call them rioters.
Oh, yeah.
In response to the rioting, and in addition, in response to the homeless issues here, there was a big push by the city council here in Denver and on a ballot initiative to allow... Denver's got a significant homeless population relative to its size, but to allow the homeless people here to basically camp on any unoccupied green space that was not somebody's lawn, and it was crazy. Some, you know, these people were pushing it, and you know, the residents of Denver are going, wait a minute, Denver has, much like parts of Chicago, these huge boulevards with wide streets and a large parkway that goes, green parkway that goes right down the middle of the street. You're going to allow people to, you know, then they're very popular walking trails and bike trails and everything else. And everybody suddenly said, wait a minute, you're going to allow those to be basically destroyed by a bunch of people who are going to, you know, set up camps and go to the bathroom and do all the other stuff they need to do just out in the open? And the response was, well, yeah, that's kind of what we're thinking of. That got voted down on a referendum. But the idea that you would consider that or think that was a viable solution, but it was based on this ideological idea of, well, if it's a public parkway, then we can't stop.
Well, it's based on two
members of the public from doing something.
It's based on two things, Lou, but I have a question for you, legal questions. We got about four of them. I'm thinking this morning driving in. My buddy, Bill, he has the last name, but I will not. You might know him. He's been a defense attorney in Chicago for like 50 years. Says that they're charging these people with misdemeanor stealing or something, not even like looting or trespass or anything. So they're letting them all go. They're not even a felony. Because Kim Fox decided that shoplifting is no longer a felony.
This is comparable to San Francisco.
Well, okay.
Where you have people just walking into stores and taking stuff because they know they won't be prosecuted.
Right. But now my question to you is, because you were one who's told the story a couple times about, I don't know, it was your son or somebody you knew was charged with DUI when they weren't even drunk, and you couldn't get the car out for $2,000. Now, explain to me why. I mean, there's zero... I'm going to get into Kamala Harris in a second, sort of the same thing. The idea that you let people double park in front of a big store and they're walking out and throwing stuff in their car or in front of Binny's, how do you not call the Streets and Sand and say, I need 6 garbage trucks, and you block the streets and those cars don't go anywhere and you impound everything? Why do you let people drive out of here? I mean, there's zero... I mean, I have a little bit, since my father and uncles were all policemen, I have a little bit of common sense, plus maybe I watch too much TV. You don't have to go and grab every person and handcuff them. Keep the cars and the stuff here. Let the guys walk home to Inglewood. I mean, what are you doing? What are we doing? Why? So we let them over the bridges, and then we close them for the people to come to work the next morning. But I think when you look at even the new vice presidential...
So let's back up a second. Let me give you my interpretation on this. For years, there has been this incarceration argument that we have too many black people in jail.
Tony Preckwinkle sings that every
racial,
day.
This is driven by racist or racial
right.
or outlook. We have too many black people in jail, irrespective of whether many of them or all of them deserve to be there or that they were all convicted as a result of a due process system. Irrespective of that, we just have too many African-American people in jail, especially men. So we're not going to arrest any more of them. And when we do arrest them, we're not going to charge them because we're not really interested in criminality or safe streets. We're interested in the head count of black people in jail. And that's what we're trying to stop. It's the flip side or the same argument with regard to the diversity in corporate America argument you see. We just don't have enough black faces. We don't have enough brown faces.
It's been split into two.
And therefore, we're going to start taking steps to ensure equity of outcome rather than equality of opportunity. This is the same mindset, and this racial or racist outlook, and I consider it a racist outlook because it absolutely starts with the first question you ask of a person who's applying for a job or whatever is, what's your race under that system? It's the antithesis of the Civil Rights Act and the anti-discrimination laws that have been promulgated throughout the country for the last, 60 years.
Well, there's been two forks to that, though, or two blades to that fork. And one I don't know enough
tines,
about it.
Tines, forks have tines.
Well, whatever it is. Just, well, what do you call a meat fork, which just got the two where you're cutting the prime rib and you go with a big fork?
Anyway, that tines.
Okay. Well, there's two of those to this argument. One is that the, like you say, there's people in the mirror that have been convicted and too many of them are black. Okay, that's one article. That's one argument. But the other argument that actually does carry a little bit of water, and I don't know how to fix this. I mean, I don't know enough about the system. The amount of people in county jail that just can't make bail that are black, where anybody who's, not anybody, I mean, there's poor white people too. But virtually every, the bail system works only for people who have some dough. And the amount of, and a lot of what they're talking about, of course none of the reporters asked these questions because they're a bunch of idiots, I think, or they're not prepared for the interview. Clearly, especially now that we haven't had a courtroom in 5 months, the idea of holding a bazillion people in county jail on bail just because they don't have $500, If 500 bucks is the number, I don't know how you, I mean, there's two issues here, Lou, is what I'm saying, especially in county jail. I would agree that for poorer people, the bail system seems a little odd to me. And I haven't really understood it, but it seems a little odd to me. I mean, if everybody in there was convicted, I wouldn't care if they're all white or they're all black. They're all guilty, right? But the idea that there's all these people are waiting for trial, I think that's, the more articulate people will tell you that's the problem in a lot of cases. That's discriminatory. Now, what's your response to that?
Well, it may be. I mean, I first of all, I don't believe in disparate impact as it applies to the criminal justice system. But in the sense that these folks have committed or are believed to have committed a crime, and can't make the bail, the maybe you come up with some other creative alternatives as opposed to just letting them go.
I would agree.
Because what's happening, and frankly, I don't think you ought to be letting them go if you're not deterring the criminal conduct in the first place.
I don't disagree.
So,
well, the guy
so
who
the idea is the, so my point is for rioting and looting, you want to deter that? Then you keep the bail system in place, and I don't care what the impact is. If guys are being arrested at the scenes of these crimes, the odds are the cops are not arresting that many innocent people. If you want to deter people from doing that, then you hold them and lock them up.
Well, I don't know.
That's a short term solution, but it may be the only solution that's gonna be effective here. Because right now, whatever you're doing is not working.
But we're getting this point from some people, and it's hard, Lou. I mean, I really hope they're right, but they just aren't. There are people that somehow make a decision, as my grandmother said. At 7, you reach the age of reason, and you can tell what the kid's going to be like when he grows up. I mean, maybe people had more common sense in those days, but. This kid who caused, well, allegedly caused the riot to start, where the police shot at him after he shot at them. Lou, the kid's 20 years old. He's already got four priors. I don't think the Lily White community that has I don't think they realize how bad some of these areas are and how far gone some of these people are.
Of course they don't. This has been, an exercise. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, you see a lot of these demonstrations. Not the looting, but certainly at the demonstrations, the principal players are white, and the attacks on the cops are being done by white people, especially in places like Portland or Seattle or even New York, and so in Chicago. I mean, I saw the video of that attack of those cops at the Columbus statue.
Yeah.
Agreed. I absolutely agree. Nobody really understands the depravity that is driving or that drives a lot of this conduct. Heather McDonald, who's a sociologist, conservative sociologist, writes a lot about criminality and just data in terms of what's in the prisons right now. Excuse me. And she notes, you know, when you go back in and you find out what people are in jail for, they're in jail for really serious stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This guy had 75% or 80% of the people incarcerated in the federal penitentiary system are in there for really violent crimes or murder. Now they're not in there for shoplifting.
No.
They're not in there for marijuana use.
But it's not
they're
just
in there for murder, rape, armed robbery, you know, mayhem, maiming, all that good stuff.
There's no doubt.
I hearken back to the Richard Pryor routine from one of his albums in the early 70s where he was talking about going to the penitentiary and rapping with the brothers in the penitentiary. And he said, you know, I come out of there thinking to myself, thank God we've got penitentiaries.
Yeah, well, you know, but it's not just a black and white issue. I mean, it's not at all. Well, we're talking about this kid. How do you get, I mean, but people seem to think that the 17-year-old that opens up on people in a park is somehow rehabable. I don't know. I mean, I have my Catholic upbringing that says everybody.
I would say probably not.
I would say, but you know what? It's not. If you anybody who, if you can find it, the Washington Post, I don't know if they put it out separately. I forget the name of the guy. Should not have. He wrote this thing. I don't know if you want a Pulitzer Prize. We sure should have, Lou. He had to do with the Horseshoe of Despair, and this was not black at all. It started in West Virginia, basically goes south across Alabama and Mississippi, which that's black and white. It comes up through Arkansas, which is mostly white. And he's talking about these areas and just people you never even hear of and the depravity. That he had this one family, three-generation family, living in, like, you know, three house trailers. They stuck together up in some mountain in West Virginia. The kids, they maintain that the kids are autistic and will not let them go to school, yet they will not go to a doctor. They will not have an independent person. But somehow, they talk.
They need the support check. Yeah.
Well, the place between the grandfather or somebody, they were getting five checks was coming to this thing. Nobody had worked in like 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, but you're not. I don't know how you bring. I mean, that's as hard of a case as any case in Inglewood. I mean, the difference is once in a while I'll drive to those areas and out of 10 people, Lou. First of all, four or five or six are very houses. Somehow they're still trying to make a life for themselves in those areas, and they're real. I'll say real families, real everything. They don't. Nobody speaks for them. That's the tragedy of this whole mess. People living in the middle of this mess, actually trying to live a real life with people, gangbangers, and people selling drugs in front of your house every night. They don't seem to have any rights whatsoever. It doesn't appear to me. But once in a while, one out of ten, somebody will walk by, and even me, being, you know, in a white neighborhood and not seeing too much of this. Somebody walked by and I go, Lou, what the hell is that? Literally, it'd be some guy or some lady that it looks like they're sort of in their 30s, but you look at their teeth and everything. I mean, now that I'm looking at their mouth, they look like they're 70. And you can just tell that this is a crack problem. This is something. And you're like, I don't even think you can. You know, if somebody drinks for 20 years and he doesn't blow his liver out, There's some rehab can happen there. Same thing with like other kinds of drugs. I don't think you come back from those at all. Don't you lose your? I mean, there's no coming back from that stuff. It's like glue sniffing, for God's sake.
Well, the this is one of the reasons why one of the figures you don't hear much about, the war on men, especially in men between the ages of 25 and 55, that the average lifespan in that group is actually dropping because of drug use and suicide and well, by drug use I'm including alcohol and suicides and that you know this has been a byproduct of fentanyl coming in and hollowing out some of these communities, the opioid crisis, hollowing out these communities, and really an ineffective public health response because of who it is affecting. And I don't know what the answer necessarily is in terms of fixing all this, but I do know that rigging the rules so that the pipeline kicks out, you know, an equal number of you know, non-African Americans and African Americans being arrested is not being hired or graduating or passing the bar is not the answer. But that's where we're headed, and that's all part of this. That this failure to maintain civil order, which is the fundamental job of any government. You have to maintain civil order. They're not doing it in New York. They're not doing it in Seattle. They're not doing it in Minneapolis. And now they're not doing it in Chicago.
Luther, your friend and ours.
The idea that they were raising those bridges, I said, that's a serious thing.
Yeah.
And if they're continuing to do it, it just shows to me, I mean, it's like Lakeshore Drive and the blizzard of whatever it was, yeah. 2012. You lose control. You lose control of the things that make your city a city. And this is another indication of it.
Well, Lou, I will say a few things here because I always drop back to the economics. And what, you know, if she came in and was on the show, you know, if I talked to her, I bet I'd really like the lady, Lori Lightfoot. I mean, Tony Preckwinkle, not so sure. She's a little abrasive, but she could surprise me too. It's okay. I never prejudge or try not to. I'm too late for that, huh? What it shows is, and this is the part that really bugs the living crap out of me, and I'm going to show you some numbers here in a second. I don't think the lady has any concept. I mean, she's not dumb. I mean, she went for the good law firms, she's an educated. She has no concept of how the economy works in her own city. I mean, you would never have Richard J. Daley do that, and he'd say, wait a minute. Don't a lot of people clean those buildings down there at night? How the hell are they going to get to work? I mean, they had their finger on the pulse of how regular people worked and how the economy, the size of Chicago, works. It's not just
okay. So this goes back to that ideology thing that I thought you're being ruled and you're not being governed. You're being ruled
right.
By ideologues. Their ideological perspective is trumping the reality in front of them.
Right. Well, that's my next clip, but I don't want to miss this before we go to break. When you talked about the people in Denver not being able to, you know, throw a tent on the bike path, basically, Lou, this is starting to remind me, and God help me, I hope I'm wrong. This is absolutely reminding me, the more I read, and I'm doing more and more of it, of the 1920s.
Absolutely.
Where we're getting more and where we have this undercurrent of a depression that's been here for really, certainly since 2008, maybe 2000, depending on what you want to call it. Undercurrent of a depression in society that because of the haves control all the, I'm not talking about right or left, I'm talking about the money controls all the media. Everything's okay. It's not okay, Lou. I mean, I'm going to give you four numbers here. Median income now, I think this is a little low, but this is from the debt clock. Median income of Americans right now is $34,287. Median income in 2000 was $30,764. So it's up 11-12%. Median new home now, 322. Median new home in 2000, 165. If in my training, which is a lot different than yours, if I give you those four numbers at a Milton Friedman exam, okay, and you say, what's going to happen to society? More of, actually, George Stigler one, more behavioral economy. You could predict exactly what's happening now. A bunch of homeless people. Homeless people, there's always homeless people downtown. There are always guys, people at the Board of Trade had money. Everybody, this sounds terrible, everybody had their bum that you gave a guy,
sure.
Gave a guy money.
Absolutely.
But all these guys were 65, 70 years old. They were Vietnam vets that never made it back into society. And now the average guy, if you walk by the Eisenhower, there are couples there. They're 30 and 25. It's not even close to the same deal that it was. I mean, the bum, for lack of a better term, the homeless person, used to be 65, and you felt, you know, this guy, you know, and he doesn't even have an address to get his Social Security check, doesn't know how to apply. I mean, you felt bad. But now these guys, you feel even worse for them. I talked to these guys. Well, I had this job here and the place closed. I can't get another one. I was making $12. I mean, they're not going to be the guys that you're going to hire as an analyst for PTI, but they're certainly capable of work and willing to. But these numbers, Lou, you look at these numbers, you go, how can there not be a problem? How many 34,000s does it take to own a home? Five people? And the people that are tearing down the Columbus statue can't wait to light up their Nikes and their Apple, and all that stuff has been offshored, child labor into China and other stuff, and slave labor and whatever you want to call it, indentured servitude. What did they say, in a 16 ton, another day older and deeper in debt? I mean, what do you think it's like living over there, working those factories? And yet we rejoice every time we go buy a pair of Nikes. I mean, somehow our mental set here, Lou, is really way off, and I don't know how we get it back. I honestly don't. Do you?
Well, okay. So let me start with just some fairly controversial things that I listen to a lot of different commentators, including you guys. So Scott Adams, who I have listened to for probably the last 6 to 8 months. Has been going on after the teachers unions. He basically blames the teachers unions for structural racism and the heavy hand of justice that falls on the African American community, because he said all of this starts with education, and we are not educating people for the world into which they are entering after they finish high school or college. They are not equipped to handle the jobs that are available, and they are not equipped to be able to dig themselves out of situations that are hugely problematic. I don't necessarily agree with all of that, but his point is education in this country has produced a significant number of people who hate America and a significant number of people who are not equipped to function in America. And don't have any prospects of being able to function. I mean, I certainly think there's a lot of merit to that. The idea that our educational establishment has been focused on warehousing rather than actually educating, especially in poor neighborhoods. I'm not going to say neighborhoods broken down by race, but more like neighborhoods broken down by class. And this goes to your point of the horseshoe of despair. We simply have not come to grips with the problems that were identified back in 1984, I think it was 84, in the study A Nation at Risk, talking about what a crappy education system we were developing.
Well, hang on to that thought, bud. We got to go to break.
This is the fallout from it.
Hang on to that thought, because I'm going to come back. I'm going to give you... My mom was kind of a studier of this the whole way. And I'll give you a couple of her thoughts to see how nutty you think she was. Moms were all a little nutty, but not her. She was kind of different. SP Futures now at 4, Nasdaq Futures up 450. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering 3 of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome up to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Just about, we're on the board of Sula Michaels from Denver, or from Colorado. He's up in the mountains. He's hanging. He's sitting on a gold mine, almost literally. SP Futures down 5. NASDAQ Futures up 2. This after a huge update yesterday. Individual stocks, I got 3M up 2. I got Apple up 230. I got Cisco down 3. They had earnings last night. And obviously, they missed. I was trying to do the 47 spread. I guess I should have been lower, but then I didn't get it anyway. So, no harm, no foul there. Disney down 39 cents. Not much happening there. Cisco was the earnings place last night. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 405, 1.7. These guys were bouncing because of us yesterday. Shanghai, however, only up 1. Let's call that flat. Hang Seng's down 13. Call that flat. So they didn't do much there, but Nikkei was up. We're in Europe, the DAX down 16.1%. FTSE down 64. That's a full 1%. These guys have been very volatile the last few days, the FTSE. DAX not so much. They've been pretty steady. CAC RON down 10.2%. Just as a review of yesterday, we had the Dow was up 289, S&P up 46, and NASDAQ was up 229. NASDAQ at one point, the futures were up like 300, and they came back down on the close some. Bonds, 0.67. Bund, minus 0.43, and in Japan, positive 0.03. I have to reiterate that yesterday, when the CPI number came out, it was a positive 0.6. It's two hot ones in a row. And I think that maybe we're starting to get some inflation percolating in here. We're going to talk about that in a little bit with our next guest, Mr. Dan Julius, but anyway, because he's our bond guy. Oil down 10 cents, 42.57. Brent down 16 cents, 45.27. Natural gas, 2.17. That's up 2 cents. RBOB, 1.24. RBOB's been between 1.22 and 1.25 for like a real long time now. Gold down 2.90, 1946. They've had a huge drop down. Silver up 5 cents at 26.54. Dollar's down a little bit this morning, so gold has actually stopped its slide here in the mid-1900s. We'll see if that holds. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an issue on the Veterans Memorial, I-355 southbound. at the bottom of the eastbound I-80 exit ramp on the right shoulder. Apparently there was a rollover semi on the bottom of the eastbound I-80 exit ramp from the I-355 southbound highway out there, and so that's causing a slowdown with crews trying to get that truck right side up and back on its way. So that area you'll experience some slowdowns on both I-80 and on I-355 as they intersect, so keep that in mind. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson still looking good, as is the Eisenhower. Edens and Kennedy are all quiet. The exit ramps into downtown have been opened as of 6 a.m., so no resulting issues or traffic or issues for anyone coming into downtown.
So what good does that do us at 5:45?
Doesn't help us, because we obviously get in before that, but for everyone else, you can get into downtown now. One other issue looks like on the Stevenson northbound side, just before Michigan Avenue, so right downtown. There's some police activity on the right shoulder. Doesn't say exactly what happened here, but just says I-355 to Lakeshore Drive is up to 33 minutes from the Tri-State 22 minutes because of the police activity there at Michigan Avenue and the Stevenson. Everything else to get out there. Weather today, another beautiful day in Chicago. Sunshine, low humidity, a high of 81. A bit warmer inland, but downtown nice and pleasant for mid-August. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 73 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, very hot today. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 114. Right now it's clear and 90. In sports, great day for our baseball teams. The Cubs are the best team in baseball through 15 games. They're 12-3. They've won two in a row. Swept Cleveland in Cleveland, winning 7-2 last night. Cubs' best start since 1970, winning 12 of their first 15. They welcome Milwaukee into town tonight for a four-game set at Wrigley. White Sox have won two in a row as well. They took 2 of 3 from the Tigers in Detroit, winning 7-5 yesterday. Sox are playing good ball. They are off today, and then they will hopefully welcome the St. Louis Cardinals into town tomorrow, pending more negative tests today. The Cardinals have tested negative 2 days in a row. If they test negative again today, then they're cleared to play the White Sox tomorrow.
I think they should test them 3 times a day.
Lastly, the Diamondbacks took care of the Rockies in Colorado 13-7. In hockey, the Coyotes lost their first game in their first round series to the Colorado Avalanche 3-0. So the Coyotes trail that series 1-0. These are best of 5 series in the first round. Blackhawks play game 2 this afternoon, trailing Las Vegas 1-0. That's a 4:30 Central Time puck drop. So a little hockey as you're getting off work today. Chief.
They have any chance to at least even win against these guys?
I mean, they definitely have a chance, but I don't think they're going to win the series. I think they'll probably lose 3-1.
I would say you're probably right. Lou, I have a quick question on the football. The leagues that aren't going to, the Big Ten and those guys that say they're not playing. Check me if I'm getting even more cynical. Of course, when that happened, I have 2 or 3 clients call yesterday and email me going, "Aren't I going to pay all these idiots all year? Like, you know, is Lovie Smith going to make his $2 million and Harbaugh is $3 million? I'm going to say, Lou, that the idea that you hold out hope for the spring, even though they have no intention of playing in the spring, is genius because it stops all those questions. But if you were just going to say, "We're not going to play this year, see you next year," I think they would be overrun by, "Are you going to pay, you know, the assistant coach, offensive coordinator at Alabama, like $2.5 million, like they just signed the guy for?" There might be an outrage about that kind of dough, especially when all these states are broke. Are you going to continue to pay students to not go to school and pay them $2 grand a month or $5 or whatever it is? But by saying they might play in the spring, it's genius PR, or am I just being real cynical?
Well, I think it is. I think it's smart public relations. So, for example, I'm a season ticket holder with a college football team here in Colorado. The prospect that they're going to play in the spring, I think, is realistic, at least to give people games to go to. It allows them to hold on to my season ticket money and not refund it. Although this is, I'll just tell you what the Air Force is doing, what their athletic department is doing. They have gone out to their season ticket holders and said, "Look, we're going to give you the option here in a month. Maybe we'll have a little bit better picture of what's happening, but not unless conferences cancel its games." So they said, "We're going to give you the option of a full refund, a rollover to the 21 season, or you can sit tight and let's see what we end up with in this fall to see if we're actually going to play any games at all. Because even though the Mountain West has canceled its conference games, Army and Navy retain, and so does Air Force, retain, I think, the ability to play football this fall if they want to do it. And some of those games, you know, Air Force is the newcomer here. It doesn't quite have the tradition that the other schools, the other two schools do. But the idea that Army and Navy would play this year is still a big deal in at those schools. And so I think what we could literally see kind of piecemeal, I won't call them pop-up games, but piecemeal games where there's a significant rivalry in place. The game has a lot of meaning for the people who are alumni, and you know, they're going to try to pull one of those off. I think spring football here in this area, in the Mountain West area, would be really interesting because, as I'm sure you know, you can get snow here, especially up at the Academy, which is at 7,200 feet, or at Brigham, Wyoming. You can get snow here into June. So,
I'm just doing the math here, which I always do, which aggravates myself that I do it. But if you want a regular season, and my calculations have, since some schools are out of school in the middle of May, I'm going to say you have to start probably the last week in January if you want a regular season. And I don't see that happening.
I think you could start playing games at the end of March.
How and get
an eight or nine game season.
I'm going to say season is right now. We started September 1st. By the time we're done with playoffs and everything, we're January 1st. Now you could cut that by a half a month, but you're still talking a minimum 3.5 months if you have a playoff or anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they're going to look at playoffs in the spring. I think it's just an idea. We're going to play. We'll play our conference schedule, and that's it.
Well, now what you do with that is you force then the are all the academies, are they all jammed into a conference? Army's not in a conference, right?
Army is in a conference, and I believe Navy is as well, along with Air Force.
Okay, so the only independent left allegedly is Notre Dame, and they're saying that if that they will be forced to be pushed in the ACC. Because never is a problem, Lou. People do whatever they want to do anyway.
BYU is still an independent, right?
What?
BYU? Are they still independent?
Well, Connecticut, I guess, is now, too.
I think Connecticut is, too, in football.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is they're going to use this. Now, if anybody plays in the fall, and if you're not going to make those kids play again in the spring. I don't think.
I agree. Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, if the Big 12 decides, or where were they? Is it the Big, who are those guys? Or the SEC decides to go it alone in the fall, I don't see how those guys going to play another 10-game season in the spring.
I'm not real clear on this, but my understanding is that NCAA rules would not allow that to happen.
Yeah, but rules are made to be broken, Lou. And that's why when we talk about, you talk about the school system I was going to mention, my mom used to say that in the Depression, when people went to school, you didn't expect any help from the families, okay? So you expected by the time the kids get out of grammar school, they know how to add, subtract, multiply, read, those kinds of things. They knew some civics, knew how to create a sentence. So you got the basics basically hammered into you pretty quick. But, Lou, there's issues today when people talk about the teachers, and I understand that the teachers' union, that whole concept, you and I, we don't agree on a whole hell of a lot, but we agree just about down the line on that one. Okay, but I've also talked to some teachers here in Chicago, and as have you and Maddie, but it's not like I'm doing this by myself. But some of the problems are stuff that even in my lifetime, I don't even understand, Lou. When we had 40 kids in a class with a nun, and it wasn't the nun. The nun, in serious conference with the parents, pretty much made everybody behave, right? I mean, you didn't want the dreaded note or call home. I mean, I don't know of anybody who got a call home. God, that would have been like, talk about suicide. But the note was bad enough. But the teachers will tell me that for somebody my age, you almost can't even understand the deal. Not only are the parents not even the ones watching the kids half the time, maybe it's the grandmother, maybe it isn't, but there's nobody to call. But the thing that I guess I have no idea about, Lou, and I don't think, maybe Maddie does, I don't know, I'm not accusing him, the whole concept of the drug part, not illegal drugs, the prescription drugs these kids are on, I don't even know what that means, Lou. I don't know of one kid that had, there was a couple of guys that always had ants in their pants a little bit and had trouble sitting for 3 hours, and I was one of the calmer ones, but still, I didn't really like it all that much. But you had a recess, but I mean, the ladies were telling me that, well, the teachers happen to be women. I mean, there could be guys too, obviously. And they said, you know, you have a class where half the class is on some sort of a, if a kid misbehaves a little bit, instead of, you know, the parents leaning on him, or you leaning on him, or he stays after school, you drug him. And he goes, some of these kids, if they show up and they don't have their medication, literally half the class could be on this stuff. And if they don't have half their medication, if they're not on it, they're bouncing off the walls. And if they are on it, their heads asleep on their desk. And my buddy, Dr. Mark, says that now there's a big, in all these schools, there's all this money on the kids' medication. He said those drugs are, I'm talking about Adderall, what's the other one? Adderall and...
You know who's being medicated. It's the boys.
Yeah.
Not the girls.
And so, but he claims that...
That's another scandal.
But he claims that and he's a psychologist and a brilliant guy, he says for kids that actually have that problem, that you can diagnose, clinically have the problem, these drugs, it's Adderall, what's the other one? Begins with an R, Manny.
Ritalin.
He says those drugs are absolutely a silver bullet. They're a miracle. He said you can actually treat something you never could treat before. He goes, but the incidence of that is actually fairly rare. It's not like half the class or anything like that.
Agreed.
He said if you are somebody who is, quote, normal and doesn't have that imbalance, and you start taking those drugs, a whole different story. Now it's like a big high. So the amount of I'll say, normal chemical kids that want those things as a drug on the illegal market, that's half the kids that are on it are selling it to the other guys. I mean, none of that took place in any of the schools I was in. I mean, I don't even know what that means. To me, it's a whole other world. So being a teacher is a lot different than the nun. All they had to do is mention your parents are being a screw-up, and that was the end of that.
I agree, but the function of the teachers' union is to reduce the ability of a school system to deal with these issues. And
see,
by
anyway,
that,
yeah.
I mean, they absolutely, like any unionized workforce, they believe in a one-size-fits-all kind of program.
Right.
That's why the National Education Association and its locals have been screaming as part of their going back to work deal that they want an end to charter schools. They want to end that competition. If we were in a normal situation, we would have schools that had, you know, facilities or programs designed to accommodate the kids that are now being drugged.
Yes.
At the request, many times at the request of the teachers themselves.
Absolutely.
And I saw this with my own kids and their friends, where the teachers were saying, well, you know, so-and-so's a behavior problem. I think he ought to be on Ritalin. And I remember the first time I heard this, and I said, are we in, you know, the Twilight Zone? Are you a doctor? Are you trying to prescribe medication for a child? Get out of here. This mentality, this one-size-fits-all mentality, is crucial for the unions because again, it allows them a better control of the workforce and the workforce rules. But it also absolutely stifles the ability of our education system to respond to all of these challenges. And you know, for example, you know what the most successful other than the feeder schools, the exemplary schools, select schools is what I meant to say. You know what the most successful graduation programs, graduation rate programs are in the Chicago public high schools. They're the junior ROTC schools, the JROTC programs, where the kids wear uniforms and they come to school. They operate under a military-style organization. They drill. They participate in a lot of extracurriculars that involve military themes. They have a higher graduation rate than almost any other public schools, with the exception of the college feeder programs. And yet the teachers' union hates those programs because, for one thing, they're not being run by union members. The guys that run those programs the people that run those programs are ex-military. They are generally not certified as teachers in terms of the overall development and scope of the program. And they're not answerable to the union for the way they operate the school. And the unions hate them. They've been working to cut down those programs for years.
Oh yeah. Well,
that's the kind of program diversity that I think you need in order to deal with these myriad of problems. The idea of one size fits all in education is just not working anymore.
Lou, let me help you. Competition is the greatest thing in the world for every industry but yours.
I'm sorry, say again.
Competition is the greatest thing in the world for every industry but yours. Then it's cutthroat competition.
Well,
the unions are all over Jay Pritzker.
That's true, although coming out of law, I always understood that was, that competition, and of course bar associations are a way of limiting competition.
Yeah.
But I understood that competition made for better lawyering.
The issue is, there was a lady on, she's been some teacher's group here before the show came on, talking about how they couldn't possibly start school because there's not a 100% chance that everybody's perfectly safe. And the unions here, from what I gather, are all over, Jay, our governor, they're all over him to close the private schools because they don't like the idea of those being open when the public schools aren't. Because,
right.
Again, it's the competition you're talking about.
It's insanity, yeah.
But, Lou, it's all a question of, and I whenever you have a disease that comes through and you got people pretty darn afraid, and for a lot of reasons, I mean, I've never once panned this thing as being a disease. My only criticism the whole way has been, what is the process for deciding how bad something has to be before you shut something down? And it's not a huge uprising of the press and people screaming at people. That's not the process. But I mean, I remember pictures. We used to go to the First Look for one of my nicest clients, unfortunately passed. Was a doctor. He was a heart surgeon at Mercy Hospital, like forever, chief of surgery. And we would go to the Illinois Lung Association or whatever it was, Chicago Lung Association. And one year, they had this huge board. It started out as the Illinois or the Chicago, essentially tuberculosis, because that was the lung disease back in the day, right? And tuberculosis was a horrible disease. It was, way worse than this thing. And they showed pictures of kids having classes, some in rural communities. Lou, they took the walls and the ceiling down in the classroom. And the kids are having class in the snow. And they're in their mittens and they had class, but they said, look, outside you can't catch it. And, we're not gonna have anybody in an enclosed room. The teachers didn't get to say, oh, by the way, I'm staying home and getting paid because it's too cold to teach. They said, if you want the job as a teacher, the kids are outside, go teach. I mean, somewhere along the line, we've lost. I look at these people, like, do Lori Lightfoot and Jay Pritzker, do they realize, Lou, that they're the hired help? I mean, I realize that for my clients, I'm the hired help. They're paying me to do a job. I better friggin' do it. Right?
No, they don't. And again, this is the huge knock on public employee unions that you and I have talked about before. These are the folks, these people, because they contribute huge amounts of money to these campaigns, they are actually dictating what their supervisors can tell them to do.
Right. And it's that, feedback is terrific. To be a boss and never listen to your people is not the way to be a boss. You and I know that. But it's somewhere along the line, somebody's got to make the call. I mean, we would never have built Hoover Dam if everybody said, it's too hot today. It's a hot every day at Hoover Dam, right?
Well, this is correct. And again, we go back to what's the basis for the these shutdowns? Number one, what's the scientific basis for it? And right now, I don't think there's a very good one. And number two, what's the cost? How many people are we killing with this shutdown versus opening back up and dealing with the virus as it moves through the community? And I've only seen one guy discussing that with any sort of definitive data, and those numbers weren't good in favor of the shutdown.
Well, no, but it's all misinformation, and I don't understand why. I don't know if it's just not good.
Simple stuff. Know that reason. It's because the disease has become politicized, or it was instantly politicized.
Well,
as a way to knock down the president.
That's
a huge driver on a lot of this. I'm convinced.
I don't believe that necessarily, but I will say that there's. Why the simple stuff, Lou? Why can't we say, like I say all the time, gee, there were 50,000 tests given yesterday, and there were 3,000 positives. But by the way, the positives were from 5 days ago, because that's when you get your results. Why can't somebody even say that simple stuff like that? Why do you lead people to think that the positives are from today when they're not?
Because that narrative is not what people want to hear. And this is... Again, we come to the dumbing down of the population, but we also come to the marketing of the population that people's eyes glaze over when you start getting into the weeds on these numbers. I will say what I said 2 weeks ago when Maddie and I were talking about this briefly. The president that we have right now is not capable of getting up and doing a whiteboard presentation that explains this. Somebody is. Somebody should be doing it.
Right.
But the powers that be on both sides have determined that this is not going to win votes. So you and I don't get this.
Well, but it's a vacuum of leadership, and everybody falls into the vacuum, right? That's the way the world is. Lou, thank you very much, bud. Talk at you next week. Be careful up there. And do it. What do they used to say? Do it to them before they do it to you on Hill Street Blues?
That's correct. Hill Street Blues.
S&P Futures down 475. NASDAQ Futures up 14. Come right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3900. 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 475. NASDAQ futures up 14 and a quarter. Individual stocks, not anything really crazy here. We got Cisco down 330, though. That's almost 7% on their earnings last night, or lack thereof. Dan, how are you, bud?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Couldn't wait to talk to you today after I saw that second somewhat hot CPI number yesterday, and I said, I wonder what my man Dan's going to say about that. What are you going to say about that?
I think I've had trouble with CPI numbers because of what they include and what they don't include. And I think going forward, there's still this battle that we've had for a number of years. You know, if it's CPI, when you look at it, ex food and energy, and then you start looking at some of the components, you really have to dig down and look at, you know, the prices. So I don't take CPI, I don't use that as a guide to investing. We kind of look more at the relative performance of CPI rather than, allowing that, like if there's a movement upward or if there's moving downward, allowing that to be an indicator that's going to impact the way we, you know, how we make investments and, you know, what areas we make investments. So, for example, if you've been to the grocery store, you see food prices have gone up considerably, especially for meat. Because we have CPI is generally measured ex food and energy, but the increase in prices was reflected. Yet the increase in oil prices was reflected in gas prices, which have gone up. But there really hasn't been the demand side. So if you actually look at the components of CPI and where the increase is coming from or not coming from, then I think there can be some confusion, or there can be, I'm not sure it's the best indicator of how we should be investing going forward.
Well, I would agree with you on that 100%. I just, all you're hearing, we have, well, like I said, we don't do the bond stuff like you guys do, but we import portfolios from a couple of places that I, you know, do some work for the Protected Index program, and there's bonds in there, and we have, matter of fact, we had a couple clients that came in, and the gentleman who found them and brought them in. He said, "What do we do with these bonds?" And I go, "Well, they're out like, you know, 20 years." And I said, "Well, where are they trading?" And he said, "Well, they're trading like, you know, 120% of value." And I go, "And I think we sell those things."
Yeah.
And say thank you very much. As the entire world, and I wanted to ask you, because it seems to me, I've been very impressed when you're looking at your stuff. It seems like you're almost not dodging it, because you wouldn't dodge. You've answered every question I've asked you, but you zero in on stuff that's got 2-3 years, or even if you get caught in some big change in inflation and interest rate stuff, you're going to be nimble. You've impressed me as your. You won't get out totally unscathed, but you'll get out more unscathed than just about anybody else.
Absolutely. I mean, we tend to focus. We always have focused on short term, where you don't have the interest rate risk. In an environment where rates are as low as they are, you're going to be taking a lot more interest rate risk, even if the inflation picture, you know, looks. I mean, it looks like even if it looks like we're going to have an uptick in inflation and an uptick in rates. We're going to stay on the short side. If we think rates are going to go down, we're still going to stay on the short side. if the yield curve is positive, you're going to get more bang for your buck if you go out long. But as a bond manager, you're always trying to assess that risk. So some of the risk in going longer could be credit risk if you're buying corporate bond, but a lot of that risk going longer is also going to be in what happens to, you know, inflation, what happens to interest rates as a result of inflation over time. And if you're at the lows of all time with interest rates, it's really hard to see a lot of upside. The analogy that I would use is we're approaching the highs in the stock market. We also tend not to be adding more. We're not momentum players. So if you will, we're not momentum players with bonds either. We're not trying to get that last few basis point drop in rates in order to, even if our short-term view is that rates will continue to remain low, which it is. We don't see any uptick coming anytime soon, but I do think the inflation threat is there, and it's coming.
I went back because I remember this stuff, being unfortunately a little older, or fortunate. I made it this far, whatever you want to say it. The collective memory of what happens when you go the other way is totally lost. And I'm not on you because this is your life, so you're going to read about it. But it is startling. I mean, I'm going to throw some numbers at you from 1979 and 1980. Actually, I got 1980 up in front of me. In June of 1980, the federal funds rate was 8.5. All right. Well, first of all, in March it was 20. May it was 11.5. Right. June 8.5. And by December it was back up to 20. So the idea of, I mean, I don't believe that any. My guess is if I think you like where you are, but if somebody called you up and said, "Hey, Dan, I got this bond portfolio. I need you to come, and we're going to pay you $5 million a year." And who knows? It might not be more than you're making. But say it is, and you walk in there and you see every bond in the place is 20 to 30 years. I'm going to say you're going to be appalled and say, "What do I do with this stuff?"
Most likely, sell it.
Yeah, well, or hedge it or do something. But the idea that we would go from 8.5 in June to 20 in December. Is totally out of anybody's collective memory.
Yeah, and it's I think it's a really good point that you make, because we can see changes in rates that rapidly. We can also see changes, as we've noticed this past week, in commodity prices.
Yep.
So we've had this huge uptick in gold and silver prices, and then just in one day we had gold come down more than 10%, and it came back a little yesterday. But yes, if you look back over history, when you're talking about, whether it be talking about bonds or stocks, actually, or commodities, you don't always have time to make the changes, especially if you're a long-term investor. So you want to have your portfolio situated to be able to handle that risk. So our job really as portfolio managers is mitigating risk. Diversifying risk. And even though there are people out there who are trying to match assets and liabilities and have to buy, like insurance companies have to buy long-term bonds, they're forced to buy whatever is coming out at whatever rate, even if that's a high-yield bond. That was like Ball Corporation issued a bond at 2 7/8 this week, which was a record low. And if interest rates go up, the price of your bond is going to go down. That could happen just in a few weeks from now. So you're taking, when you take on interest rate risk and when you take on a long-term investment, you really have to consider all the options and the alternatives and the diversification that you're allowed to take before just saying, "Hey, this is where the market is. 2 7/8, that's as good as I can get. Okay, well, let's lock it in." And in this environment, I don't think that's going to, in very few cases, I don't think that's really going to get you that total return or even that income that you need to lock in for long term. So good point. Rates can move very quickly. This environment is very likely. We're very likely to see a rapid shift in rates and a rapid turnaround, even though it's taken a long time going back over the last 10 years to get down this low. it's likely to see, we're likely to see a rapid turnaround, because it generally happens when people least expect. And as soon as that news gets out that we truly are starting to have inflation, we'll see a quick uptick in rates, which means a quick down, downturn in the price of your bonds.
Well, you're,
and again, if you're going to hold them till they mature, that's fine. However, you're going to have an opportunity cost in the meantime, and you're going to get, you're going to take a hit in your market value. So, in effect, you're not going to be getting the full rate, if you will, which you expected when you initially purchased the bonds.
Well, let's hope that you and I do not have to have this conversation with any client where we buy them a bond and the thing's trading like 60, and we have to say, "Don't worry, you're in for the long term."
Well, I've had to do that more than once.
I know it's never a good day, is it? I mean, don't worry, you're in for the long term.
It's not a good day, but it's part of the process. And again, hopefully, you're well diversified. It's not the, you know, a lot of people, you know, the hard thing about managing stocks or bonds is when you get new cash on day one, and it's the interest rate environment is very, very low, and maybe you don't expect it to stay there, but you have to invest the money. So you look for alternatives. We have been buying preferred stocks as an alternative. We find that they're, we can get some good value, some good income, obviously, without taking that interest rate risk. So you have less interest rate risk, if you will. You can either buy mandatory preferreds that are required, you know, where the company is required to pay that dividend every quarter, or you can buy perpetual preferreds where you will get some of the upside in the equity, but there'll still be a fairly high dividend rate. And in most cases, it's just like the stock. A company, as long as a company is performing well, they're not going to cut the dividend or skip a dividend payment. So you do your homework on the company, and then you have you own a security that diversifies your portfolio, but also offers upside.
Well, Dan, you impressed me. Is, you know, what you're doing is sort of like when I was in the OEX. All right, when I, in 1985, there were 350 people. It was nothing but business, and pretty much, no matter what part of the curve or whatever you did, no matter how you found your way in the pit and did the, I'm going to say just about everybody was making money. Okay, so then after the crash, the business dropped some. So now there's 300 people, less business, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm one of the best guys. You know, I'll still make some, I'm still doing okay. And then I've made it to, like, you know, 1990, and there's less people and less business, and the, you know, exchange is screwing the product up big time. But it got to the point where today, there's one person in there, you know, and so at some point, I mean, I think that you guys have made it this far, from what I gather, by being quicker and smarter than the next guy and working harder. And you're zeroing in on stuff that most people have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I do. I think our listeners do. I mean, not many people are going to go find some special preferred where you can still find something from your client. But we're sort of reaching, in my opinion, the point where, as our friend Brendan says on Monday, insurance companies aren't buying this municipal bond crap at 2%. I mean, they're not going to sit on it. At some point, even you guys, I mean, if the Fed is the only buyer, if we come Germany, where the rates are, you know, minus half a percent, you're going to say, you know what? If we get nothing for a year, it's not going to be a bad year. I mean, it just gets to the point where the risk doesn't. I don't think you guys are there yet, but every week it seems like you're showing a little more work the last week to get you to the same place.
I agree. I absolutely agree. It's more challenging to find those opportunities, and we're watching spreads, which is the difference between the yield on the corporate bond and the yield on the comparable treasury, narrow, and they're narrowing very quickly. And whether that spread that you're getting, which is basically your risk premium, whether that really reflects what's going on in our economy, more importantly, what's going to be going on in our economy. So should we see a slowdown, a lot of companies are going to be overvalued, if you will. So on the equity side, obviously, there's we're looking at a market that, for many people, including me, many segments of the market are overvalued right now as we approach new highs. Same thing on the bond market, but you're getting less yield. So momentum, I think, will continue to drive the market in the short run. One name that I want to mention, just to give you an example, as I was talking about preferred stocks, I'm actually in the middle of a conference right now. It's Canaccord Genuity's having their growth conference, and it's all being done virtually, which is very efficient for those of us who, you know, you were able to have 10 one-on-one meetings a day with the senior management, so it lends itself well to our style. So one of the companies that I met with, it's their chicken soup for the soul, but the preferred stock is what looks really interesting, and its ticker is CSSEP, Chicken Soup for the Soul. When I first heard the name and did a little research, I was thinking about those books that came out many years ago. But actually, this company is an entertainment company. What they did is they spun off, or they not spun off, but they actually separated the business. So the books and the other part of their business are private, but the entertainment business, which is a video on demand business, is a public company, and they had bought Crackle from Sony at a bargain. And they also have a nice library, and they're very competitive, and they're doing well, and the movie Going Break was one of their recent movies, which I still want to see, about student loan debt. But they have a preferred, and their preferred, it pays 9.5%, and it's currently trading at a discount. So it's trading at a dollar price of about 23. The par value is 25.
Wow.
And it's trading at 9.5%, and this is a great story with a lot of upside potential.
Dan, are preferred stocks making someone a comeback across the board? I mean, for a long time, yes. I never saw any preferred stock. I mean, Google and these places have them, do they, or Amazon, or I don't think.
They don't, right, but some of the smaller companies have used that as an option, you know, for finance. A couple of the companies that where we own the preferreds have actually been buying back preferred. That's been a trend as well recently. Having that dividend, and having that yield, really looking at the yield, and when you can see a yield of 10% in an environment like this, it's pretty attractive, especially when you get to know the company and realize that you've got some great assets in this company. Beyond a good management team, you have saleable assets, and there's going to continue to be demand in this environment. So it's a good product, a good business to be in, and a very well run business. So there's opportunities. You got to hunt for them, though. It takes a little bit of work to find them. But those are the ones that I think give you good diversification in your portfolio, and definitely give you good upside, and in this case, give you a nice fat yield.
Dan, are any of these convertible, which means, to anybody who doesn't know, that means you can, at various times or sometimes at any time, you can convert them into common stock, or did any of them come with a warrant? I haven't seen a warrant in 20 years, but they used to come with warrants, some of them, didn't they?
Some of them do. I mean, one of the names I had mentioned on an earlier show was is Nabors. Nabors Industries, which is, they were an onshore driller, fracking and onshore driller, and an industry, again, that it's not too exciting right now, but a very well-managed company, and they have a preferred 6% mandatory that's convertible in May. I'm not sure there's a whole lot of upside at this point in the equity, but, you know, the equity is up, and it's up in the 50s now. It traded as low as 10. So there's been a nice bounce there, and there has been upside. And you have a nice, again, 6%, paying 6% at a discount to par. Your yield is going to be, close to double digits. So that's another example. There's another company called Blue Knight, that has a unique business. They do storage facilities for, asphalt that's used in, road construction. And we've had an uptick in road construction and infrastructure building, but these guys just get paid for having the storage. They're basically renting the storage out to their customers, and they're moving more into the asphalt business. And I think in time, they've got a preferred that's 5.75%, again convertible, and also has upside, BKEPP, Blue Knight. So there are names like that. You know, you really want to get to know the company. You want to get to understand their capital structure. You want to know where your priority is, and whether they're shareholder friendly or preferred shareholder friendly. But these are good investments that give you yield in an environment where a lot of us are yield hungry. So
then do you find that some of the stuff we're talking about, I hope, we have a pretty sophisticated group of listeners, so I think they understand. But how many people even know what preferreds and warrants and things are now? I mean, it's not even on that. You go months watching national and financial TV, and you'll never hear the terms.
You know, they're not really, their ideas that aren't really, solicited, if you will. There's stories that aren't necessarily told, and that's why we see a lot of value there. Kind of the same, honestly, the same with high yield. I mean, the first story that made this past week was Ball Corporation's 2 7/8 bond. So, I mean, you see quite a bit of news on that, but they missed, like, several other names, two companies, which I'll mention briefly, that have some high-yield bonds. We love these companies. We love the stock. And so if you love the stock, you got to love the bonds. And they're, you know, you've got some good fat yields on these names, but they're not out there. You know, when they're doing the earnings call, they aren't saying to everybody on the earnings call, oh, by the way, have you taken a look at our public debt? You know, it's trading at 6 7/8, or, you know, it's trading at 7%. And yet you love the company and you see the upside in the stock. So they take a little more digging. They're not liquid. So you've got to be trading on a platform where, you know, we can buy them anytime we want, being on interactive brokers, being an institutional manager. But you can find them and you can put in orders for them. And they're, again, they give you some good yield with good solid companies that have upside on the equity side. So, but you're absolutely right. You don't hear about it in the media. You don't even hear about it on these earnings calls. So we have discovered just this past week, with two companies that we love, and I would, one of the companies, they're two Florida-based companies, MasTec, ticker symbol MTZ. MasTec is just a great company. Up until recently, I think it's now the number two largest Latino managed organization based in Miami. Their business started doing infrastructure repair and maintenance after hurricanes, and it led into their two biggest businesses right now are maintenance of cell towers and maintenance of pipelines. And their MasTec is a household name here in Florida. Stock price over the last few weeks has gone from high 30s to high 40s. Most analysts have 60, 70, 80 price targets on it. Not a name that is, you hear about on CNBC, but a name that is good, solid, long-term hold, and we are long-term investors, and I've loved this company for years, great management team. But the other thing that they have to offer are bonds that are yielding close to 5%. And while 5 doesn't sound high, it certainly sounds high when you start thinking about what you get in your checking account. So
okay,
3-year maturity on these bonds, and I think it's 4 7/8. And one other company, again, a Florida company, PGT Innovations, PGTI is the ticker symbol. They're based very close to where I am here. We started investing in this company back 6 7 years ago. Bought the stock at 3, and I think it traded at 19 yesterday. Again, long-term play. The company has the largest market share for hurricane impact windows and doors, and it's a household name here in South Florida. Any place that requires any new construction or that requires windows must have hurricane impact windows. Very, like, great, great management team. And they also have public debt, 6 7/8. So 7% bond in a company that is beyond stable, I mean, a company that's growing. So, you know, discovered that on the earnings call. We had never really looked at the bonds, but they would be a great investment in this environment now. So I guess the bottom line is it's a lot about doing homework and digging a little bit to find these opportunities, because they are not, as you mentioned, they're not going to be out there in the press. They're not going to be the names you read about. They're not the go-go names like the Teslas. They're the names that, you know, they're like the second tier or third tier names that involve a little bit of work. But in terms of upside and performance, I would call them first tier.
Well, how do you, we don't have a couple of minutes, but in this, I'm sure we could talk about this for a month, but how do you determine in this kind of the odd world we have with no antitrust enforcement, no nothing, and anything around those lines, and you've got obviously the COVID has exacerbated a lot of states that are like broke. How do you figure the risk of like somebody does infrastructure work and does a lot of work for the state of Illinois, and they say, by the way, we're not paying you for 5 years? I mean, as good as these companies probably are, because you say they are, how does anybody be, shall we say, Teflon to everything that's going on around them right now?
Yeah, it's the potential issue with the one company I mentioned, the asphalt company, because that's their primary business. They have contracts, long-term contracts. It could be a potential risk for them, but for the other companies that do more maintenance, it's pretty much a requirement. You know, it's not, you know, this has to, it's a priority, if you will. It's considered an essential service. These are companies that have continued to work. I think at some point the funding has to be there. I know the federal government at one point was really pushing to give more funding towards infrastructure. Seems like in certain parts of the country where the need is really strong. So I think it'll continue to remain a high priority item, and I also think it will continue to remain an essential business. So these businesses will continue to operate regardless of COVID, and they'll continue to remain essential when the roads get to a point where they're unsafe, and that has happened in certain parts of the country.
Okay.
So not as concerned, although certainly a concern from a funding point of view, and funding continuing to be cut to states and local governments.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Dan, thank you very much. But as usual, really great stuff. SP Futures down 25 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 40, though. NASDAQ's going to keep going up here today, it looks like. I would assume that Tesla's only up $67 today. It's a tough day for that. We're only up 67, Dan. What do you think of that? Should be up at least 80, don't you think? Tesla?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of people are digesting some of the new news on the political front, the administrative front, and how that's going to impact different businesses. And I think people are just sort of sitting. It's also August, so people are trying to get away or take a break or catch their breath during this period. So there may not be quite as much activity here over the next few weeks.
Dan, you and I are talking about getting somebody 5 or 6% in a year. They just got 5% in Tesla this morning, for God's sake. Thanks again, buddy. See you next week. SP Futures, I say down 1, NASDAQ Futures up 40. Be right back, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Mayor Weber. Mr. David Adelman in a second. SP Futures. Now we're up 270. We got to be up every day, every day. We weren't up 2 days ago, and boy, we sure were up yesterday to make up for it. Nasdaq futures up 55. Money pouring in. We're just pushing. Dow futures still down 40, however, but they'll be up in a minute. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei up 405 points, 1.8%. Shanghai up 1, call that flat. Hang Seng down 13, call that flat. We're in Europe. We got downside here in Europe. DAX down 46, that's 0.3%. FTSE over down 69, that's 1.1%. FTSE's been the most volatile in this group for the last 2 or 3 weeks. Unless David, why are they? I'm not sure why. Usually they are not. CAC run down 18.4%. Bonds, 10-year yield 0.68. The Bund minus 0.42, so that's the highest or the less negative we've seen in a while. Japan, positive 0.035. Boy, I never thought I'd see that. Oil down 10 cents, 42.57. Brent down 14 cents, 45.29. Natural gas, 2.14. That's unchanged. RBOB unchanged as well at 124. Gold down 17, 19.31. Silver up 18 cents, 26.16. Anybody got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still looking pretty good on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways at this hour, which is good news if you're heading into downtown. All of the downtown exits were reopened at 6 a.m., so you should be able to navigate through the area. But we're not seeing any delays on any of the expressways, so that's good news. Off the expressways, there's some down power lines in the southwest suburbs. 143rd between Wolf Road and 108th Avenue is blocked due to down power lines that I assume are from Monday. But
there's still people without power.
Yeah, which is crazy. Throughout the western suburbs, ComEd has said that a lot of people won't have power until tomorrow or Saturday, which would be 5 days without power, which is not good. Weather today, it's going to be another beautiful day here in Chicago. Lots of sunshine, a high of 81, a bit warmer inland. Right now, it's mostly cloudy and 74 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 114 today. Right now, it's clear and 91. In sports, White Sox took 2 of 3 from the Tigers in Detroit, winning 7-5 yesterday. Cubs are off to their best start since 1970, best record in all of baseball at 12-3. They swept the Indians in Cleveland, winning 7-2 yesterday. Diamondbacks blew out the Rockies in Colorado 13-7. Coyotes opened their first-round playoff series losing to the Avalanche in the NHL playoffs 3-0. They trail that best-of-five series 1-0. Blackhawks trail their best-of-five 1-0 as well to Las Vegas, and that will resume this afternoon, a 4:30 p.m. Central Time puck drop for Game 2 of Blackhawks versus Golden Knights. Jake.
We have a... David, how are you?
I'm fine.
I'm going to see if you can tell me whose quote this is. This is actually one of my favorite quotes the listener sent. He could have left the name off this, and I would have known who it was, believe it or not. Well, a lot of quotes I don't. I lose track with it. What is objectionable, what is dangerous about extremists, is not that they are extreme, but they are intolerant. The evil is not what they say about their cause, but what they say about their opponents. I always thought that was one of the most incredible quotes. Who's that, David?
Gandhi. I don't know.
Bobby Kennedy. Robert
wow,
Kennedy.
Extremists in Kennedy's age. I don't know.
Well, there's always been extremists, but now they get on TV more, it seems. Just saying.
more publicity since 9/11.
Yeah, hey, David, we got our bump in the CPI yesterday. We've had 2 down days in bonds, maybe 3.
Import prices up 7/10, hotter than expected too. That's what they're telling us. I was going to tell you this anecdote. You know how I always say a lot of the inflation is hidden, and I think you agree. So last night we were at odds about what to make for dinner. We say, screw it, we'll just go pick up, you know, fast food. So I go to this local place. It's been there for literally 40-some years. They do catering for friends of ours, whatever, just wonderful folks. And, you know, and you can still get a $5 or $6 sandwich. So I go pick up a chicken sandwich for my partner, and I go get my $5.99, you know, Polish. And I'm looking, and before the thing was huge, it stuck out the ends. And I mean, this thing doesn't even fill up 3/4 of the bun. And so I looked at him and I said, you know, I'm not complaining because you do a wonderful job. Preparation's great, it tastes great, blah, 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 blah. But how did the thing shrink? And they said, you know what? It's COVID, it's supply chain. We have not changed our supplier in 20 years, and we just can't get it. The restaurant issue, the hotel issue, whatever. And so we didn't want to raise the prices on the sandwich. So it literally was an 8 ounce. Now it's a 5.5 ounce. And that's what we're doing so that we don't have to jack up the price on the sandwich. So in the CPI, I was thinking to myself, in the CPI, that Polish sausage is still $5.99. But it's 5/8 of what it was.
Well, my mother, who's been gone a long time, used to love Grape Nuts. We're not a big cereal family, but and I like them too. I'm going to say, if you buy a box of Grape Nuts now, it's still the same $3.50, which is high for cereal. If you get two bowls out of it, you're doing good.
Oh yeah. So I mean, it's and I told the guy, I said, you know, go back to the old supplier with the bigger sausage. I'm happy to pay $2 so that you don't lose money.
Yeah, well, it's sort of reaching that stage. I mean, everybody knows I really like Italian food. I'm not a bad Italian cook. I would never be a cook in a restaurant because I couldn't do it the same way all the time. Like, for people who don't know, Maddie's brother is a serious chef. And the difference between me being, quote, a good cook and him being a serious chef is night and day. Those guys,
I watch them all the time on the Food Networks and Bobby Flay and, you know, whatever. And they're really special with the way they just do it automatically like a machine.
Well, but it has to be same way, same cut, same everything has to be cut just right, so it's all done at the same time. You know, it's a whole different program than me hacking around in the kitchen for 3 hours and throwing something out that tastes good. I mean, it's not even. I mean, you can't even imagine. It's like me hacking around on the driving range versus watching the guys in the PGA, right? Pretty much.
Why? I don't know. Quite that much
different.
Maybe it is.
Yeah, maybe it is. But David, when and if are we going to see this turn? I mean, everybody's talking now that the interest rates are definitely negative, even if you use the CPI numbers. And I was just, we had a guest on earlier, if you're listening, but I dug back something you should never do, David. Actually, go get some facts because you don't want those in financial news today. Some of these in 1980. And on February 5th, the federal funds rate was 15%. March 18th, 20%. The idea that these things can't move to the upside in incredible rapidity is, I mean, what do you think happens the first day? It's probably going to take two or three more hot CPI numbers that the Fed or the European Central Bank calls their usual flunky that they give nothing but money to, Goldman or whoever, and says, the guy says, hey, how much you want to buy today? We've already got it all ready for you. We've front run you. No, we're not buying today. We're selling. What do you suppose that day looks like in the market, David? The buy market?
No, I get it. And, you know, you can see it on the chart that 30-year bond, September future. I mean, you don't get back over to 180. That thing is topped, which means rates have bottomed.
Yeah.
I would have to think with the amount of liquidity and, you know, with the market, I think, when you see gold go to, you know, well over 2,000 and silver go to $28 or $30, whatever, and, you know, the market smells the inflation. I mean, maybe they need to go to my hot dog stand to really see it, but it's there. I think the market is finally starting to wake up. How much will it, you know, will the Fed always be there to cushion what, you know, other countries or hedge funds don't want? I can't answer that. Maybe they're going to just be there for the foreseeable future and until COVID disappears. I don't know the answer to that. But the chart says the rate futures have topped or interest rates have bottomed.
Well, I think what they're doing is they're not letting the market, well, they're certainly, in my opinion, they're not letting the market, quote, be free.
No, I get it. I agree. You can see it.
But when I say that, I'm going to be narrower in the criticism or whatever you want to call it, explanation. They used to. The Fed normally would go out and buy short-term debt, right, if they want to put money into the system. And they would let that percolate wherever it percolated. And if inflation was coming, you could actually see a time when, and we saw this a lot in the early 80s, where they would do something and the short-term rates might go down because they put more money in the system. But because that would generate inflationary expectations, it would actually bulge the long end of the curve, so it would steepen, basically.
Twist the curve.
Well, no, I'm saying they didn't twist it. They only operated in the front end, which left the back end do what it essentially wants to do. But
yeah,
now
let the market go. I mean, in a way, it's de facto twisting. They get the effect that they'd want.
But now they're going out and they're buying the long end too, because they're saying we don't want any inflationary expectations either. So we're driving the long end down, which I don't think they did in the early 80s.
No, well, and they put on this front, and I mentioned that Monday, you know, over the weekend. I saw that Neil Kashkari, you know, who's supposedly a genius economist and, you know, tremendous banker from Minneapolis Fed and blah, 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 blah. And he sat there with a straight face, you know, and said not only are interest rates low and remaining low, whatever, the future expectations for inflation are extremely low. We'd like to bump them up. And I'm like, either the guy's just, you know, out and out, you know, just telling a fib, you know, to relax the people and the market, or he's relying on data that, you know, is just hiding the truth.
David, I sat on one board in my life, and the ability of people in a board, whoever it is, to fool themselves on something they don't want to believe. I hearken back, and I can't believe I don't remember this guy's name, but I've told the story before. One of the guys who was on the Federal Reserve back in the 60s and 70s when the inflation first started. And he said, and this guy sounded like, you know, every one of these guys who leaves the Fed board, you hear them on TV, they all sound brilliant. And they got it all figured out after they left. But while they were there, they were part of the party line, basically, right?
That guy, I can't even remember his name, the guy who recently retired as Fed president of Dallas, and he's now a staple on CNBC. I mean, he is totally a different guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, this guy said that, I mean, this is, we were talking with Dan earlier, but Dan's got so much other stuff to say, I didn't want to interrupt him. He was talking about, you know, they look at the CPI without the food and energy. Well, the history to that was, according to this guy, is when the oil embargo started in 73 and oil shot up and the inflation was percolating through the Federal Reserve's party line for really a half a decade, maybe a whole decade, was this is an oil shock. It was brought upon by those dirty Arabs, basically. They're raising right. oil prices. And then food prices started to go up and other prices started to go up. Meanwhile, Milton Friedman's running around Washington saying, you idiots, you're the ones that are doing it by pouring so much money into the system. And what was his quote? Inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon. Well, he just said it just happened to spit out in oil. And they went further and they said, okay, because food, there's so much oil involved in the transportation of it, and even you're driving tractors, God knows what you're doing to get food, that we'll pull food and energy out as being something that is we're not going to count that, or we're going to separate it, whatever they said, and we're just going to look at the other stuff. And this guy says, well, we pulled food and energy out. First we pulled energy out. Then we put food and energy out, food and energy. And then there was a third thing he pulled out that I forget. And he goes, finally one day we walk in and we look at each other and said, you know what, we got inflation. He goes, we've been denying it for really 6 years. You know, and it was right in front of our face, and we kept looking at other causes for it instead of us. And finally we said, you know, we're the ones that are doing this. The money supply up this much. He said it took a while. I mean, and these guys are no different.
These guys have been on for a while.
But
longer
I'm saying,
than a while. And they're still saying, you know, forget even now when we don't have any. We don't see any all the way down the road.
Well, the same thing those other guys did with energy and food, these guys have done. If you look at the price deflator, what's it, the P, whatever they call it, the
price deflator, yeah, of GDP.
The measure of inflation that they use, it's supposed to be better or more. Now, the CPI is a slave to its past, right? To a large extent, when you compare the CPI today, you want it to be somewhat the same as the CPI was 10 years ago, or else it doesn't do you any good, right? Except stuff
that's...
Well,
that's theoretically correct.
Theoretically correct.
They've changed that basket of 12 items many, many times.
Right, but it's way more than 12. It's like 9 zillion. Everything in the world is in there, but the...
No, I know, but the one that's quoted, the one that you see come across the table, I mean, the one that they print in the government transcript is totally different than the one that they quote on CNBC.
Right. But what I'm saying is...
What they quote on CNBC and what comes across ADP is the 12 items. And that they've adjusted and seasonally this, and we're going to take out beef, and I've talked about it many, many times. The one that you get in the official transcript in the government is totally, I'm not going to say it's totally different, but it's totally inclusive, where this one, the quoted number, the headline number, even the core number is different.
Right, but I'm saying that the mistake, for lack of a better term, how those guys deluded themselves, I'll use that term instead, they took oil out instead of realizing that that was just where the pressure was. I mean, if inflation was even across the board, David, if every time inflation went up 10%, we all got a 10% raise, and your hot dog went up 10%, it wouldn't do any good, any harm or good to anybody, would it?
I get what you're saying.
But our in our generation, in our world, if you go back in the last 20 years, I mean, there's a few of them, but I'll pick out the big horse in the room is medical expenses. They're just up to counting medical expenses as 7% of the CPI when it's been 20% of the GDP for 10 years.
No question.
So there's their gorilla in the room that they refuse to. And the interesting part about the price deflator, and I've seen it before on Wikipedia, the Fed uses their price deflator brings the medical expenses up to 15 or 16%, but then they have an adjustment which brings it down to 5%. So their blinders are the medical expenses.
Okay. Well, now I'm understanding what Neil Kashkari said over the weekend.
If you did this on a rainy Saturday. If you look at higher education, medical expenses, and I'll say elementary education through property taxes,
I was going to mention that was my third choice.
Yeah, so I went back all three of them. If you look at the GDP number, not the GDP, the CPI number since 2000, they have it should be up like 55%. That's their number. So if something, you know, if something was a dollar in 2000, it's $1.55 today. All three of those are like 2.8 to three times higher. And if you add them all up in the CPI, even though they've goosed the medical a little bit. Take higher education. If you can find the property taxes, which is somewhere buried in owner's equivalent rent, I'm going to say those three total up to about maybe 12 to 13% of the CPI. I challenge anybody to say that property taxes, education, and medical expenses is only 12% of their budget. I challenge any of this.
That's crazy. It's dumb. And that's why, you know, the old thing, garbage in, garbage out. You put in garbage day, then you're going to get garbage out. And that's how, you know, we sit there and say, oh, geez, you know, our inflation's not only low but going to remain low, and we don't see it in the foreseeable future. And actually, our benchmark is 2%, and we're not hitting 2% on the CPI. We'd like to boost inflation.
Yeah.
Oh, really? They didn't go to my hot dog stand.
No, hey, all right, Dave, let's shift gears for a second. I've asked you this before, and obviously the answer is very difficult. When you have, you know, and I'll go back in history, first were probably railroads and televisions and some drug companies, I mean, you name it. There's always been eBay. There's always been three or four, in virtually all the time, there's three or four companies that just become, you know, God's gift to the world, and there's no top to them. People were willing to pay any. Obviously, the dot-com crash. Where do you get a grab on something like Tesla or something like Amazon or even Apple? Because Apple's at a point now where, you know, once you get past in the mid to high 20s or even more on the earnings, it's almost like the earnings don't even matter. How do you even other than, in other words, how would somebody pick, quote, a top on Tesla? And I think, and I also want to ask you a two-part question. Even though these guys are now going to split, does the fact that these big companies, except for Apple's a little bit more widely held, but big companies are very comfortable now being 40, 50, 60% institutionally owned, which they didn't used to be. Does that affect the fact that, you know, one place buys a little every day, and does that, plus they're in these indexes? I mean, what causes something to go, let's say, higher than maybe it ought to, which isn't to say, I mean, our market's the market, but clearly, I mean, these things, I mean, Apple went from $1 trillion to $2 trillion of value in what, 12 weeks or something?
That's crazy.
Yeah. But I mean, how do you...
I'm not sure I know exactly what you're asking. I mean...
How do you value something that is not valuable? I mean, Amazon, I mean, they don't really make any money. I mean, they're 100 times earnings or way more, a couple hundred times. I mean, why not have it be 5,000? Why not have it be 1,000? I mean, how do you put a number on it?
It's growth. I mean, and the market really, really, really values growth. I mean, that's why, you know, we've talked so many times why if you take the FANG names plus Microsoft, and I suppose now you'd put in Tesla, you know, why is that, you know, the percentage of the S&P or NASDAQ composite or whatever grown to such, you know, outrageous, you know, percentage of the overall index, and you get these, you know, things where those five are up 26%, the average stock is down, you know, 3% for the year, and how is that, you know, is that going to ever revert to the mean, or how is that possible? The market is in a stance where until the, you know, 3-4 days or 2-3 weeks ago for a couple days, it says, okay, we're going to get out of growth and fund value, or these SPACs, you know, are there, or there's a bunch of IPOs, so we need to fund it, so we'll sell those off, you know, for 3-4 days, and I've been saying, you know, buy the NASDAQ on every dip and sell, you know, the Russell on every rally. I still think that's the way, because the market has a penchant for growth. It's growth, growth, growth. And it's only going to reward those companies that do it. So if you take, hey, full disclosure, I'm not huge, but I have a position in Amazon and have, you know, for, I don't know, 6, 8, 9 months, I own a position for myself. I'm going to say it, you know, publicly. So, but the market values growth. So, and they can make money. When they decide not to reinvest in the business, they have a spectacular quarter. Then they'll have, you know, quarters where they'll show a net loss. But it's, you know, in buying, you know, electric trucks or trying to get away more from FedEx or whatever. So the market values that. And I presume, I'm not a Tesla owner nor a short, but I presume it's the same thing. If they see growth in the unit sales, they don't care if the margin's there or not. They don't care if, Mercedes and Volvo and BMW are coming with electric vehicle. If they see that number, you know, grow, they're going to reward Tesla. If they see that it's a disappointment from projections, then the stock's going to come off $100, $150.
I would love to be that kind of a half full guy, and I agree with you. It's America. There's always going to be some growth, you would hope, but God, we just had a quarter we dropped 33%. I mean, right now growth is eating your young. It's Amazon's growing because other places are going lousy. It's not. I mean,
I get it. I get it, but you know, it's.
I guess it counts.
The stock market right now is, and has been, I'd say, for certainly since before the pandemic and continuing to today, it's growth. If you got it, you get rewarded. If you don't, you're not going to get rewarded.
David, thank you very much.
There are some exceptions like airlines and cruises and hotels where the market's going to look ahead and say if the government's there to cushion them and they're going to be able to survive, someday there's going to be some good vaccines and it's going to come back. But other than those particular areas, if you're Macy's or Nordstrom's or Neiman Marcus, you've had it. You have no growth, you're bye-bye.
Dave, thank you very much, buddy. We'll talk Monday. S&P futures up 175. NASDAQ futures off to the races again, up 67. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.